This program is provided by lawyer Kyung Jin Kim.
So picture the Roman Empire at the absolute height of its power. Like if you were to look down at it from above, you wouldn't just see, you know, monuments or armies.
Right, you'd see the roads.
Exactly. You'd see this vast, really intricate nervous system. Tens of thousands of kilometers of physical roads paved in stone, meticulously engineered, basically connecting every remote province right back to the center.
Yeah, and on those roads, you have this constant flow.
Yeah, this dignified flow of civilization. I mean, you've got soldiers marching, sure, but you also have merchants trading silk, scholars carrying scrolls. It was an explosion of human progress.
And all sparked by a physical network.
Right, a network that just, you know, collapsed the distance between people and ideas.
Because when you build the roads, you basically dictate how the future flows. It's the literal infrastructure of an era.
Well, today we are witnessing the construction of the modern equivalent of those Roman roads, but this time they aren't paved with stone.
No, they definitely aren't.
Jensen Huang, the CEO of NVIDIA, is building a new kind of road network out of silicon and code. It is an invisible highway for data. And there is a brand new traveler walking on this road, artificial intelligence.
Yeah.
And the vision we're looking at today is one where this traveler is meant to be our companion, you know, not our conqueror.
Which is such a vital distinction, especially when you think about the cultural whiplash we've all experienced recently regarding what this tech actually means for our day-to-day lives.
Totally. And that brings us to our mission for this deep dive. We are exploring the source material from Chapter 12 of the book Caesar of Silicon.
Specifically the chapter titled Coexistence of Human and Machine.
Right. We're going to unpack this really intense anxiety that gripped the world between, say, 2024 and 2026. Everyone was just terrified of AI stealing jobs.
Oh, absolutely. Painters, writers, programmers. I mean, everyone was panicking.
But Huang offers this profound counter-narrative on why we should actually be running toward this technology, not running away from it.
And the panic was entirely understandable, right? Like when you see a machine suddenly write complex code or generate fine art in seconds.
Scary.
Yeah, the immediate biological response is that it's a threat to survival. But Huang has this specific phrase he repeats a lot that kind of cuts through that panic.
What does he say?
He says, AI is not taking your job. Someone who knows how to use AI will take your job.
Oof. Okay, that sounds a little harsh at first glance.
It does. But if we connect this to the broader picture of history, it's actually a universal truth.
How so?
Well, think about it. The hunter who figured out how to use a stone axe, they brought home way more food than the hunter using bare hands.
Right.
The farmer who hitched an iron plow to an ox vastly outperformed the farmer who was just, you know, dragging a wooden plow by himself. The technology changes, but the fundamental dynamic doesn't.
Okay, let's unpack this a bit, because Huang makes a distinction in the text between jobs and tasks, and I think this is where people really get tripped up.
Yeah, it's basically the crux of his entire argument. A job is the overall role, like the ultimate purpose of your work.
Okay.
The tasks are the individual, often tedious, repetitive chores you have to complete to fulfill that role. So Huang argues that AI is not replacing the job itself. It is simply taking over those repetitive tasks within the job.
Okay, wait, I want to push back on the basic math of that idea.
Sure, go for it.
If a tool makes you so much faster at your tasks, doesn't that inherently mean a company needs fewer people to do the job? I mean, if I can suddenly do the work of five people, the logical outcome is that the company fires the other four. It kind of feels like, I don't know, false comfort from a tech CEO.
I get that. It's a completely logical assumption.
Yeah.
But historically and economically, it's actually incorrect.
Really?
Yeah. The text uses a fascinating historical example to illustrate this mechanism. It's called the radiologist paradox.
Oh, right. The Jeffrey Hinton thing.
Exactly. So about a decade ago, Jeffrey Hinton, who is, you know, one of the foundational figures in AI, made this really bold prediction. He said that within 5 years, AI would be better at reading medical images than human doctors.
Wow.
So his conclusion was that we should honestly just stop training radiologists.
And from a purely technical standpoint, he wasn't wrong, was he?
Not at all. He was completely right about the technology. Today, AI is demonstrably faster and way more accurate at spotting microscopic anomalies in x-rays and MRIs than the human eye could ever be.
Right.
But despite that reality, there are actually more radiologists employed today, not fewer.
Wait, how does that work? That just defies basic arithmetic on the surface.
Because Hinton fundamentally confused the task with the job.
Ah.
The task was looking at a black and white image and finding a shadow. But the reason the radiologist actually exists in the hospital ecosystem is to diagnose illness and treat human patients.
So the AI just took the boring part.
Exactly. When you automate the grueling task of staring at hundreds of scans a day, the doctors suddenly have the bandwidth to do the actual job better.
They have time to be doctors.
Right. They can analyze patient data much more deeply. They can consult with surgeons on complex treatment plans. They can track the longitudinal progress of a disease over time.
So they aren't just processing images, they are practicing medicine.
Yes. And when doctors are freed up to practice deeper medicine, the quality of care goes through the roof.
And I guess when the quality improves that dramatically, demand goes up.
Exactly. Hospitals realized they could provide a much higher standard of care to a larger population, so they needed more radiologists to handle the increased capacity and that new elevated standard.
That makes a lot of sense. It actually reminds me of the classic spreadsheet example from the source text.
Oh, the Excel story. Yes.
Yeah. When Microsoft Excel was first introduced, everyone thought it was the end of the accountant. Like, you just don't need a room full of people with physical calculators anymore.
But Excel didn't kill accountants.
No, it just eliminated the manual math. It basically allowed accountants to become financial strategists.
Right. They stopped doing arithmetic and started doing business advisory. The tool just elevated the profession entirely.
But that raises a massive operational question, I think. If we aren't spending our days doing manual arithmetic anymore, what exactly is the modern equivalent of business advisory that we're supposed to be doing?
That's the big question.
Like, if AI is making us wildly productive, where does all that save time actually go?
Well, to answer that, the source text looks inward at NVIDIA itself.
Okay.
So NVIDIA employs thousands of software engineers and chip designers, and all of them use an internal AI coding assistant called Cursor.
Like an AI co-pilot?
Exactly. It acts as a co-pilot.
Right.
It suggests code. It hunts down hidden bugs. It summarizes massive technical documents in seconds. It provides this huge measurable boost in productivity across the whole company.
Yet NVIDIA didn't initiate mass layoffs of their engineering teams?
No, they hired significantly more. Because the underlying philosophy here, as Wang explains it, is that human ideas are infinite.
Infinite?
Yeah. If you give a team a tool that shrinks a project that used to take a whole week into a single afternoon,
mm-hmm.
the team doesn't just, you know, go home on Tuesday and take the rest of the week off.
Right, unfortunately.
They immediately start looking at the backlog of ambitious, seemingly impossible projects they never had the time or resources to tackle before.
It's almost like the concept of induced demand in city planning.
Oh, how so?
Like, if you build a wider highway to reduce traffic, the extra space just encourages more people to drive, and eventually the highway fills up again.
Oh, yeah. That's a perfect analogy.
Human ambition works the exact same way our goals expand to fill the increased capacity. But from a macro perspective, does the global economy actually have enough work to go around for a planet full of these hyperproductive people?
Well, the source material highlights a really stunning demographic statistic that directly addresses this.
What's the stat?
By the year 2030, the global economy is facing a severe labor shortage of roughly 50 million people.
Wait, a 50 million person deficit just missing from the global workforce?
Yes. Across critical sectors, too. We're talking manufacturing, transport, logistics, healthcare.
That's terrifying.
We have to look at the mechanics of what's happening globally. We have the baby boomer generation retiring en masse. And simultaneously, birth rates in major economies have plummeted well below replacement levels.
So we literally just don't have the human bodies entering the workforce to replace those who are leaving.
Exactly. We don't have enough people to sustain the economic growth we want, or even, honestly, to maintain the physical infrastructure we currently rely on.
Which completely flips the script on the narrative that AI is stealing jobs.
Totally.
We actually have a massive growing void of labor that desperately needs doing just to keep the lights on.
And this is where Phuong introduced a truly brilliant framing at the CES technology show in January 2026.
What did he say?
He stopped referring to robots and AI merely as tools, and he started calling them AI immigrants.
AI immigrants. That's fascinating. Framing them as immigrants shifts the entire perspective from, like, replacement to addition.
Right. Think about the actual economic mechanism of human immigration. Immigrants arrive in a new land, they participate in the economy, they take on labor, and by doing so, they expand the overall economic pie for everyone.
Yeah, they buy goods, use services, generate tax revenue.
Exactly. Huang argues that AI and robotics will function the exact same way. We need these immigrants to step into the deep, dangerous mines. We need them driving the long-haul trucks and managing the massive, grueling logistics warehouses.
Because we don't have the people for it.
Right. And when they fill those severe physical and digital labor gaps, they grow the economy, which naturally creates a wealth of new, safer, and more creative jobs for the human population.
So AI isn't the enemy of the worker, it's the tractor for the knowledge worker.
That's a great way to put it.
But if we take this from the macro global economy view and zoom way in, like down to the intimate reality of an everyday office, who exactly is this AI immigrant that we are going to be interacting with?
Well, according to Huang, the future office will be a mix of biological employees, that's us, and digital employees.
Okay, digital employees sounds a little sci-fi.
It does.
Yeah.
But it's crucial to understand that a digital employee is not just a chatbot.
Right.
We've all used chatbots. You ask a chatbot to plan a trip, and it just spits out a static text list of tourist sites in Paris. It's essentially a very articulate search engine.
It gives you information, but it doesn't actually do the work.
Exactly. What Huang describes is something called agent AI. An agent doesn't just return text. It is designed to reason, to formulate a multi-step plan, and crucially, to use external tools autonomously.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so if you tell an agent AI to plan a trip to Paris, it doesn't just give you a list. It searches the airline databases, compares the flight prices, checks hotel availability, cross-references that with your personal calendar.
Wait, it checks your actual calendar?
Yep, and then it actually books the tickets and puts the finalized itinerary on your schedule. It executes the task from start to finish.
Because of this autonomy, Huang actually made a really bold prediction to NVIDIA's own chief information officer that the traditional IT department is going to undergo a complete metamorphosis.
Yeah, he told them the IT department will essentially become the HR department for digital employees.
I have to admit, the idea of giving performance improvement plans to software sounds bizarre.
It is weird to think about.
It represents a fundamental shift in how we view our tools. Like, what? Software is no longer just a static utility like Photoshop or a hammer. It's an entity that uses tools itself.
But think about the mechanics of what a human resources department does for biological employees. Hmm. They hire, they train, and they manage performance.
Right.
Future IT departments will do the exact same thing for agent AI.
How does that even work in practice?
Well, hiring means selecting the right AI model.
Right.
You know, you need a different model for the marketing department than you do for corporate finance.
Makes sense.
Training means feeding that model the specific corporate data, the company culture, and the historical files it needs to understand its specific job.
And managing performance.
That means constantly evaluating the agent's output. You have to monitor if the agent is hallucinating, meaning, you know, is it confidently making up false information or citing fake documents?
Yeah, that's a big issue.
You have to evaluate if it is making good decisions and communicating effectively with the human team members.
But if the digital employees are doing all the heavy lifting, like executing the plans and actually using the tools, what exactly is the biological employee left to do? Do we just like sit back and watch the agents work?
Not at all. We actually move up the chain of value.
Up the chain of value? What does that look like?
To understand this, look at how NVIDIA physically designs its computer chips today. A modern AI chip has billions of microscopic transistors on it. Think of a transistor as a tiny switch that controls the flow of data.
Okay, billions of switches.
Billions of them packed together form a three-dimensional labyrinth that is as complex as a massive city.
And human brains simply cannot comprehend a map of a billion switches.
It's biologically impossible to design and verify that manually. So NVIDIA uses AI to help design the chips.
Okay.
And then those newly designed, more powerful chips are used to build even smarter AI models, which then design even better chips.
It's a loop.
Yeah, it's a closed-loop system that Huang calls the AI factory.
See, a traditional factory produces physical goods like cars or shoes. Calling it an AI factory feels a bit abstract to me.
Right, but an AI factory produces intelligence as a tangible product.
Intelligence as a product.
Yeah. Instead of a conveyor belt spitting out a car, imagine a server farm spitting out perfectly optimized logistics routes for global shipping networks.
Wow.
Or outputting perfectly balanced code for a new operating system.
Mm-hmm.
Or even generating a brand new chemical compound to be tested as a cancer drug. It produces usable intelligence at an industrial scale.
That's wild. But where is the human in this factory?
In this factory, the human is not marginalized. The human actually steps into two vital new roles: the conductor and the curator.
Okay, it's like being a gallery director.
Exactly.
The AI has the technical capacity to paint 1,000 canvases a minute. It can generate endless variations of a concept, but it's the human who has the lived experience, the specific taste, to walk through that gallery, pick the one painting that actually communicates the right message, and decide to put it on the wall.
That's a perfect way to look at it. The human provides the why and the what, and the AI figures out the how.
The conductor.
Yeah, the conductor tells the orchestra what emotion they want the audience to feel. The AI plays the instruments. Go back to our medical example. The AI can synthesize 1 million medical journals to write the perfect treatment plan.
But it's the human doctor who sits in the room, holds the terrified patient's hand, and guides them through it.
Exactly. Empathy, ethical judgment, and taste become our most valuable professional skills.
Because the AI is handling the complex how, the source text points out this incredibly empowering side effect. The barrier to entry for building complex things basically vanishes.
Oh, completely.
The programming language of the future isn't C++ or Python. The programming language of the future is just human language.
English, Korean, Japanese. It really doesn't matter. This is the ultimate democratization of technology.
Right.
Historically, if you had a brilliant idea for a piece of software or a data project, you were trapped if you didn't know how to write code. You couldn't do it.
You had to hire a team of developers.
Right. But today, a farmer with zero technical background can ask their digital colleague to analyze complex soil moisture data. A biologist can ask an agent to write a script simulating genetic sequences. You just talk to the machine in plain language.
The fact that human language is the only code you need strips away all of our excuses. It places an immense urgent responsibility right back on our shoulders.
It really does.
And this urgency really comes through in Huan's 2023 National Taiwan University Commencement Address. He didn't give, you know, a polite, optimistic graduation speech about following your dreams.
No, he definitely didn't.
He essentially told a field of hopeful graduates to run for their lives.
He stepped up to the podium wearing his signature black leather jacket and delivered this very stark warning. He told them, run, don't walk. Either you are running for food or you are running from being food.
That is a pure survival mechanism.
Because in the world of technology, walking implies maintaining the status quo. And in the age of AI, maintaining the status quo is a mathematical impossibility. It is guaranteed obsolescence.
Because it's moving so fast.
Exactly. Consider the sheer speed of change. Over the last 10 years, AI computing performance hasn't just doubled or tripled. It has increased by 100,000 times.
100,000 times.
It has completely shattered Moore's Law, the old golden rule of Silicon Valley. The computing power doubles every 2 years. The curve isn't a curve anymore. It's vertical.
So when he says run, he doesn't just mean working longer hours.
No, he means agility. He means the willingness to endure the pain of totally changing your direction when the environment demands it.
Which he knows all about. The text mentions that Huang almost took NVIDIA into bankruptcy on multiple occasions.
Oh, yeah. His path wasn't just a straight line of unbroken success. When their first major chip failed early on, he had to swallow his pride, go to the CEO of Sega, admit he'd completely failed, and basically beg them not to cut his funding so his company wouldn't die.
That takes a lot of humility.
And later, he had to agonizingly pivot NVIDIA completely out of the lucrative mobile phone market to bet everything on a totally unproven field called AI computing.
So running means abandoning what used to work the very second it stops working.
Exactly.
And he practices what he preaches on a personal level, too. Even as the CEO of one of the most valuable companies on Earth, he uses AI tools like ChatGPT, Perplexity, and Gemini every single day as personal tutors.
Yeah, he's always learning.
He literally prompts them to explain this topic to me like I'm a 12-year-old. I mean, it requires a tremendous amount of intellectual humility to do that.
Because the moment you think you know everything, you stop running.
Yeah. But how does someone at the top of the mountain maintain that level of hustle without just burning out entirely or, you know, without becoming incredibly arrogant?
By maintaining what he calls the 30-day mindset.
The 30-day mindset.
Yeah. Huang wakes up every single morning operating under the assumption that NVIDIA is exactly 30 days away from going out of business.
Wow, that sounds exhausting.
Well, he clarifies that this isn't a state of blind panic. It's a state of healthy tension. It's an engineered mindset designed to prevent institutional arrogance.
Ah.
If we connect this back to the very beginning of our conversation, The Roman Empire from our opening scene didn't collapse because some overwhelming outside force suddenly conquered it.
Right. It collapsed because of internal laziness.
Exactly. It fell because of an arrogance that assumed the roads would just maintain themselves forever.
Man, we've traveled from the physical roads of Rome to the invisible silicon networks of tomorrow. We've moved from the very real fear of losing our livelihoods to a future where we act as conductors, directing orchestras of digital employees.
It's a massive shift.
We see now that AI isn't some dystopian overlord waiting to replace us. It is a lever. It is a tool that amplifies human will, giving us the scale and the speed we need to tackle the genuinely grand challenges of our time, from curing disease to optimizing global logistics.
The tools have changed, but the human drive has not.
Which leaves you, listening right now, with a profound realization. We've learned today that the technical barrier to entry has vanished. If human language is the only programming language you will ever need, and you have billions of digital employees standing by waiting for your instructions, what exactly are you going to build tomorrow?
Yeah.
Because the future isn't something to predict, it's something to make. And the roads are waiting for you to walk on them.
This program is provided by Lawyer Kyungjin Kim.